How do I find my heart in the mess of recovery? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Brandon, what is going on, man? You're looking dapper today.
Oh, why, thank you. Yes.
Your locks are like extra curly or something.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like, I never knew about hair, but the weird things that you have to do, like, you like crunch it with your hands and stuff to like make the curls stay. And I don't know. Usually I just wake up, shower, and whatever it is,
so
it
that's
is.
That's the question, is how long did you spend today getting that to curl that way?
This is enough. I did nothing today.
Okay.
So, that's
what everybody says.
Women are jealous of this. Like, I didn't actually try this morning. So, I guess I'm blessed with decent hair. I don't know. I did have the widow's peak that you made fun of me growing up with my whole life. So I had to deal with that. But other than that, my
old childhood trauma.
Yeah. But now I'm proud of my widow's peak. So
there you go.
Well, should we get into it, Tyler?
Let's go.
All right. Well, we have Casey today. And I got to say, before we introduce Casey, I love Casey's name. One of my favorite people's name, Casey, our sister. So
that's our awesome sister's name too.
So Casey, if you could just give us a little bit of background and tell us what's going on with you, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I can do that. So my husband and I have been married for 8 years. We have 5 kids, he told me about.
So wait, I heard that right? Right. You've been married 8 years and you have 5 kids.
Yes. Our oldest turned 6 in July and our youngest turned 1 in August. So we
have
pretty compact, which adds a lot of joy and a lot of stress.
You're busy.
Very, very busy. So, yeah. So, and we had a really, quick dating experience. People are like, oh, we dated like a year. Dallas and I, my husband and I dated for 2 weeks before we decided to get married. So it was super fast. He told me about his, pornography addiction, about just a few months before our second anniversary. And just 'cause of some trauma that I've been through in my adolescent and early college years, I just like became super codependent. And I would say I enabled his addiction for a very long time. And I mean, Tyler can attest to the belief that I had that I was just going to love him out of this addiction, that I would never kick him out. I would never, I would never do anything drastic. I was just going to try and love him through this. And so we've been working, we're both in groups. We've worked with Tyler for about 5 years off and on, just trying to work recovery. The addiction is still pretty active. And we actually just had a shift about 2 weeks ago. I did some holotropic breath work with the girls in my group, and it really shifted something in my belief system, that I believe was causing the inability for me to start taking this seriously and seeing it for what it is. And so now, my husband and I are actually separated. He's living with his parents and I am living in our home, and it will be that way until there's a significant amount of sobriety and recovery. And so that's where we're at. That's kind of like the condensed version, the watered down version of everything. So, yeah.
Wow. A lot's been happening.
Yeah. I've done more recovery work in the last 2 weeks than I have in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Can I ask you, you know, maybe there, it's hard to put into words, but what shifted 2 weeks ago that hadn't been there before?
For me, it's actually really easy to pick it out. I discovered that I had a belief that I was not enough to God, that I was never going to be enough to him. And during this breathwork session, the girl that did it, it was a guided meditation also. And, it ended up kind of the climax of the experience was this meeting with whoever we wanted to imagine. And I imagined God, and this meeting with him. And in this meeting, he just put his hands on my shoulders and just looked me straight in the face and just said, "You are enough to me. No matter where you are in life and what you're doing, you are enough." And then she kind of after that took us back through our life. And so just having that shift that I am enough to God, has been a really big change for me. Because I think my whole life, I've realized since I submitted my question, I've realized that I've conformed to groups of people my entire life because I just want to feel loved and want to feel accepted because I didn't feel that way from God. And so I think that shift in my mindset, especially with my husband and I situation, I started to realize that I was enough to God and I didn't need my husband anymore. Mm-hmm. If that, you know, in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to stop enabling him.
What you're talking about, Casey, is so interesting to me because, when I talk about real recovery, a lot of people can't quite define it or understand what it is. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of doing that. You're getting there talking about what actual recovery is. When we talk about your recovery, I want to ask you what is that? And when we talk about your recovery as a couple, what is that? Like what do those things feel like and look like? What do you think?
For me personally, my recovery, at least the way that I envision it is I want to become, an individual. I want to become somebody that knows, kind of just like what makes me tick. I want to know like the things that fill me. Mm-hmm. I want to be true to those things. I want my relationship with God to be something that I create, not something that I feel like other people mm-hmm. are telling me how it should be. And so for me, I think in the simplest terms is recovery for me is being true to my own heart. Mm-hmm. And I have to discover what that is in order to do that.
But it's Casey, before you answer the next question, like what you said is so important. In order to be true to your own heart, it requires the strength and the courage enough to not need other people's acceptance and validation. And so it's kind of this catch-22 thing of like, well, okay, I got to let go of trying to get my worth from everything else. I got to trust that God does love me, what you were talking about earlier. And then I can resonate in self-love, self-acceptance, in peace, in all of those things. And then I can act from that place rather than acting from this place of fear all the time, trying to make sure that I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's a very different way of living, and it's a very different way of feeling day to day when you have that answer already. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, it is. Even just in the last week or so, it's been very different to just go through life with that type of belief, not mm-hmm. needing other people. Because I have lived my life that way forever. As long as I can remember, I've picked out points where I did things just because other people wanted me to or liked me in that way. Mm-hmm. So
before you continue on too, I just want to point out specifically for our listeners a couple of things that sort of principles that you were speaking that didn't you didn't say exactly, but one is that you've come to this understanding that you are accountable. So that's one, accountability. And the second one is creation. It sounds like something in you wants to go create. You were saying to create the life I want, create the relationship I want with God, not what I've been told, but I'm accountable for creation. And I think that those two things put together are really powerful in being able to move you into and through and into new places. Now, it sounds like the reason you're coming on the show is because you're starting to step into some of these places and they're maybe a little bit foreign to you.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit scary and kind of messy right now. But before you go there, you can finish, if you want to finish Brandon's second question, what's recovery as a couple?
That's a good question. This is a totally new realm because I thought recovery was, you know, me just like babying him and that kind of stuff. I thought that was recovery. And so as I've been just in this new realm for the last week or so, my vision for recovery, and my husband and I have actually talked about this, I feel like recovery as a couple is where we can be individuals and have our own individual strengths and weaknesses and likes and dislikes. And we love and support each other in those individual personalities. And somehow, I don't know how this works, at the same time as we create so much love and respect for each other as individuals, we will grow together as a couple in love and respect. Something that we found that we did often was we always were trying to change each other. And we were always kind of shaming each other for who we were. And so I feel like if we can get on, you know, into recovery, into a lifestyle of recovery, it will be, we support each other in those individual things that we like and believe in. And somehow it will work together where we can grow as a couple in those things because we respect each other.
Yeah. I love that answer. You're describing interdependency, but it can be very uncomfortable for some people who have been in a codependent relationship. What you just said, you know, we honor each other's individuality, we support, we empower each other to be yourself. Like, can you do that, Casey, when it comes to spirituality? Can you do that when it comes to sex and sexuality, even maybe finances or how we deal with each other's families? You know, some of those things like, well, sexuality, how do I honor his individuality and he honor mine? But we've been so tied together in that realm and really caught in a should fest of the way it should fit in this perfect box. It's really hard to break away and say, hey, we're going to honor each other's individuality first and foremost, right?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the whole thing's going to be a huge learning curve and learning experience. And honestly, I have no idea how it's going to go.
I'm thinking, Brandon, I don't know if Dad ever gave you this lecture, but shout out to the old man right now. I'm going to give some of his marriage advice. I was getting ready to get married a long, long time ago. And my dad said to me, it's like, you know, Tyler, like people always talk about marriage being this thing where you come in and it's a 50-50 thing to make it work. And he said, you know what, Ty, like a good marriage is actually different than that. A good marriage is 100 and 100. And the thing you focus on is your 100. And I heard that, you know, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I like, get it. Like, be the one to always give your 100%. But talking the way that we're talking right now, that advice actually becomes even more important, because how do you give yourself to a relationship if you don't even know who you are, if you don't understand what your value is, if you don't even know your own value, how do you give it? And
right.
And so when you've got two people who are actually working that honest recovery of systematically being reminded who they are, uncovering the parts of themselves, going on this journey to understand and know themselves, the more that that uncovers itself, if you've got two people doing it, the more that you can actually give to one another. And most of us sit in this world where we think the other person is going to complete us and tell us who we are. And then it never works because you got two bankrupt people taking withdrawals from one another.
Yeah.
Right.
Jenny, my wife sent me this quote the other day, and this is off the top of my head, but it was something like, more than any plant medicine or retreat that you go on or therapy that you do, you will know yourself better if you're in a healthy relationship. Like it is the thing that provides the most opportunity, if it's a healthy relationship, for us to really know ourselves. Mm-hmm. If you're in an unhealthy relationship, it actually gets in the way of it. And I think of you, Casey, like your husband's out of the house now. If you look at your life and you're like, okay, let's say your life is a house and you've built this house all around you and you put this wall there because your mom told you that's where that one should go. And the church told you that's where that one should go. And your friends who are going to judge you said, well, you know, put that paint on the walls and this and that. So now it's like, whoa, hang on here. I'm not living my life from a place of pleasing everybody else. You might take out the sledgehammer a little bit and start busting out some walls.
Yeah.
Which could feel liberating and good. Like it could feel awesome. And you totally should do that.
Yeah.
But also like to pump the brakes and say, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Like maybe that wall there, I actually do want it there. Mom told me to put it there. Dad told me to put it there, whatever. But I actually like it. I'm gonna keep that one. But it's gonna be messy and it's gonna be uncomfortable as you go through this process, Casey, until you get used to, hey, now my life is more congruent in my integrity and living in my truths here. To get back into that congruency, there's a process of discomfort that and chaos that that needs to take place. And so having your husband out of the house, I think, is like removing a metaphoric wall, right?
Yeah.
And then you're asking yourself, okay, for me to feel safe, for me, independent of him and his truth and who he is, for me to feel safe in an intimate relationship with him, what does that mean? So now how do I operate in that space now that I got some space from him in stepping into that? And you're now acting from a place of power and love, not from a place of fear and control, which is very different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually feel like something just right before I jumped on, something that hit me is for, 6.5 years, I've been able to hide behind his addiction where I say, oh, well, you're doing this, so therefore I get to do this. Or I just get to place all of the things that I struggle with and say, well, it's because of his addiction. And so, yeah, now that that's removed, and I mean, it's, it's at least not in the house and I'm not surrounded by it all the time. I'm really having a lot of time to think, okay.
About you?
Yeah, about me. It's not there to like place blame on anymore. And who do I want to be? And what do I want to do with my life? And, it's been, like you said, it's been really like kind of scary and messy, and really had to be introspective and figure out, all these voices that I hear, what I want to take and what I want to run with. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
It's an interesting place to be in, Casey, the way you just described it, where you laughed when you said it, but you basically said, by setting the boundaries that I've set, you did put yourself in an interesting spot where you have to realize that there's a tendency in you to want to absolve yourself of responsibility and blame.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, I got to work on this, whether he's in the picture or out of it. Oh, I got to work on this. And that can be extremely empowering, but it can also be really like difficult and heavy.
Yeah.
too, right? Mm-hmm. And the question is like, how do you lean into it with eyes of growth rather than getting buried by the heaviness or wanting to go back to the old way of being, which is, you know, you could, anything could be your husband's fault today if you want it to be.
And maybe, I don't know, something I've been feeling lately, or maybe just in the last few days, because we've been separated now for just over a week. And coming from someone who's really codependent, like I'm already starting to feel those, like, maybe not the old beliefs, but the old habits starting to really want to, almost like my own addiction, you know, an addiction to him, where I'm wanting to start checking up on him more when that's something I know I don't want to do. I want him to be accountable when that's appropriate. I just feel all these like anxieties coming back. And it's really hard, to not suppress them, but to like, just be like, it's okay, you know? And so I don't really know how to work through those things right now, because normally I would just call him and be like, what's going on? How do you feel? Are you struggling? You know, all of these codependent things. And like, what can I do to help you? Like, I would just want to fix you. And then if something has happened, you know, I'm in the one up position now and get to do whatever. And so I feel all of those tendencies in that cycle starting in me. And I, now that I'm not in that situation, I don't know really how to work through it.
Okay. Excellent. I have some ideas for you. Okay. It's interesting though, like that anxiety and those feelings, are they valid?
No.
Okay.
Not.
I would say they are. I'd say they're very valid.
I think a lot of them are normal, but some of them are actually not justified.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let me distinguish. Valid. Yes. The feelings are real to you.
Yes.
You feel those things. So I could come along, you know, as a therapist or a husband or whatever and say, that's stupid. Don't feel those things. Don't. And you'd be like, oh, okay. Like that doesn't really help much. I still feel them. You have reasons to feel them. You've been in the marriage you've been in. You've had the trauma you've had. Now, you're probably having a trauma response to the space that you're having. So are they based in reality? Probably not.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. The feelings are valid. So because the feelings are valid, before we just say stuff them down and like tell yourself not to have them, actually go the opposite direction with them. Honor them, see them, get to know them. There's that anxiety. And what I normally want to do with that anxiety is go control the situation by getting my husband to do something and to fix this. Mm-hmm. But now Casey is powerful and loved and an agent unto herself. So I'm going to go do something with these feelings. And what I'm not going to do is self-reject to get rid of them. I'm going to go practice self-compassion, self-love, self-care to really process these feelings. And be okay that I have them. And then all of your tools come in play of self-care to process those things and allow yourself to have them. But you got to come to it from that place, or else you're just going to keep feeding this dynamic of, I'm bad because I have them. This isn't real recovery. I shouldn't have them. I should stuff them down. Okay, I'll call my husband. Husband, like, tell me you haven't acted out today. Okay, I feel better. Kind of, but not really. It comes back tomorrow.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? So if you were to honor those feelings and embrace that you have them, then what would you do with them, Casey?
That's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. I think I'm working on being compassionate with myself. I think self-care at times is really hard for me. So I also homeschool my children. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always with them. And so it feels like at times with at least self-care and how I would like take the time to process through those types of emotions, I don't have that time. And one of two things, I one, either don't have the time, or two, I almost feel like self-care becomes addictive for me, where if I take a little bit of time, I get out of this mom mode and it's hard for me to flip back into it. And I just feel like I just want more time to myself, which at the same time, I feel like I need to be compassionate towards that, because for so long, I have just tried to be this mom that everybody wants me to be. And so I'm also trying to like get out of the thought process that my life, you know, not most people don't homeschool their kids, especially when they're as close as they are as mine. And my life is going to look different than my in-laws' life, or my mom's life, or my siblings' life.
Casey, I want to ask you, is that what you want? Like, do you choose that, or have you chosen that for other people?
Like homeschooling or just the whole, I chose it for me. It was an experience, that I felt that God wanted me. Well, it was, I really feel like it's what I'm supposed to do.
Okay.
But at the same time, then I get all these voices in my head about, you know, well, good moms do this. And it's like, well, you know, in that situation, like that mom's not home all day with their kids. And so to feel like I have to be with them all night when I'm with them all day, you know, it's not a normal life. It's not normal. I don't live in that typical situation. And I'm having to work really hard, which comes down to the whole conforming thing that I felt. I'm having to work really hard to push opinions away instead of embracing them, even if I don't believe them. It's literally feels like work to have to push all of these thoughts away because it's what I should do. But I don't feel like it fits in my life, if that makes sense.
To go along kind of with what you guys are saying, Brandon, and I know you said you were going to offer some other stuff too, so I don't want to derail it too far, but just it's right in line with what you were saying. I like what you're saying is that you become aware of that thought or that feeling that you're having. You meet it with curiosity and self-compassion first, and then you ask the question, does my reaction currently fit the facts? And if my reaction does fit the facts, then I should continue with my reaction and carry on. But if my reaction doesn't fit the facts, that's when you move into a new set of choice, whether you're either going to practice the art of surrender, but you're doing it with compassion now instead of judgment, or you're going to move into what's a skill called the opposite action skill, which is to actually do the opposite of what you're feeling because you've seen that the facts don't dictate that that's what this situation would warrant. So in your case, it would be, okay, like my reaction doesn't fit the facts. It's okay that I'm having it. And I'm going to step into accountability and creation or whatever else, self-care, those things, one act of those things in order to help my body rewire itself to the facts.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one way, that's just one little skill set that you can use is, use that curiosity and compassion to then ask the question, does it fit the facts? And if it does, carry on. If it doesn't, either move into acceptance and surrender or opposite action.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Casey, I want to ask you, how do I word this? Do you want your kids to learn that dealing with their emotions is important?
I do. I didn't used to believe that, but I do, and I feel like it's also very important.
Okay. You'll see where I'm going with this one. Do you want them to love themselves and take care of themselves? Mm-hmm. Okay, how do you teach them that?
I do it.
Yeah. Okay. So on one hand, it's like, but I can't, because if I do, I get addicted to it, or I'm too busy, I have way too much. I still see a lot of kind of constructs of shame and should running the show as a mom. The best way you can teach them how to love themselves is for Casey to be Casey, not for you to be what you should be as a mom. You know, maybe you take a nap every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because that's your rhythm and that's who you are. But for you to let go of what you're supposed to do to really know yourself and then to allow yourself to step into that is really important. And I know with 5 kids, it can feel impossible, but there is some things you can do. You can do self-care with them. You know, you can go for a walk with the kids and put them in a stroller and go down wherever. Or
that's wide stroller, Brandon. That's like a country road type of a.
Okay, we'll put them in the van and go for a drive then. or things like, hey, every other month, or I'm going to take a weekend that's my weekend. And husband, you got the kids. Like, really, like I am gone. It's my weekend. It's going to happen. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like I'm taking a break from being a mom because I need to come home and be a mom. And so like, I got to do those things. But right now you're in the grind of it. You're in the thick of it. It's not going to last this way forever. And right now it's really important that you show up for you. And it's cliche. We hear the whole thing, take care of yourself first so you can take care of others. Put your oxygen mask on first, all those things. But when you're a mom with young kids, it's like, yeah, I know that's true. But right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And even for me, just like even when you said, you know, you're going to take a whole weekend. It's not only like the mom stuff for me, like I should be there with my kids. It's also the these are all the things that I'm trying to work through to figure out what my individual belief and feeling is about this. Cause you know, like finances, my husband owns his own business and we're doing pretty well, but it's kind of been like beaten into my head that there's a certain financial life we have to live. And it's just like, I feel so much shame about it when this is kind of starting to go deep. Cause in my family growing up, my parents just lived on debt. But you know, we did well, we didn't have a ton of stuff, all these things, but we were a good family. And then on the flip side, My husband's family is very much about like save, we're frugal about everything. We don't get into debt, all of these things. And I've really been kind of shamed for how I grew up because I still have those tendencies to like self-care for me is going shopping. Not that I'm going to go spend $1,000, but just even like going through the stores. And then if I'm like walking through the stores and my husband calls and he's like, oh, great. And, you know, it's just, it's all of these different areas of self-care or just all these beliefs. It seems like there's always something that feels shameful about who I am. And that's like what I'm starting to try to like work through is, okay, I want to come to an agreement on finances so that it's not, I don't feel so shameful about mm-hmm. who I am. Same with like, you know, intimacy and same with being a mom. My mom worked my whole life. There's a lot of trauma around that for me. So I don't believe that I want to work, but maybe I want to have a side thing. And, you know, am I a bad mom for wanting that? Hmm. And, because my husband's mom didn't work and she was a wonderful mom. But at the same time, like she didn't homeschool her kids and she wasn't with them all the time. And so I'm just like in the middle of, you know, just like what you guys have said, where it's really messy. I'm really having to sort through a lot of, beliefs from two families I love so much. And trying to figure out where like God wants me, And at the same time, having to deal with all the natural codependency things that are coming up. And, you know, my husband, you know, I want our relationship to work, but I'm also like, sometimes it's easier to feel like it's just not, and just to move on. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of emotion going on right now. Having to break the codependency and having to find myself in the middle of all of it.
Could I ask you, Casey, let's use the financial one for a second. Let's say you decided to go window shop and you ended up spending $1,000. What would that mean?
At least my immediate thoughts is I'm undisciplined. I have, not that my husband makes me feel this way, but I've disrespected all the work that he's done, and the time he spends working and all the, his hard work. And I'm choosing to be materialistic instead of something mm-hmm. else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're irresponsible, you're selfish, you're materialistic. This is kind of getting to the point Brandon was trying to make, I think, is that you're still living in a world where there's no room for risk and mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happens if you go and make a mistake? Let's say you do something, you make a decision as a mom about the kids' schooling and it backfires in your face. Like, so what?
I don't know.
You're so afraid of that guilt and that shame being confirmed that any little, you don't have any room to take the risk to do the learning. And what if instead you kind of looked at yourself, and this is where the continued wrestle with God comes in, as a continued work in progress, which means if you go too far one direction, you can still correct back. Like you can make corrections as you go and as you learn, rather than needing to have it perfect right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right. That's how these things work. This is the way the human condition works is, you know, I could get sober from pornography by going fly fishing every night. And then that would be selfish. So then I'd have to do something different to balance out fly fishing in a healthy level. And that's how it's going to change and grow. But if I'm stuck needing to be perfect without ever having practiced it, it's a pretty hard place to be in.
Yeah.
And you're also stuck in this place of comparison to other people rather than the regrounding to who am I?
Yeah.
Right.
But like, and what Tyler just said is going to apply to what I say here. Is your way of thinking about money wrong? And is your husband's way right?
I would say no to both.
Okay. Okay, so your way's not wrong and his way's not right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that was the right way to answer that. But I believe that both of our beliefs about finances and about a lot of other things can be like meshed together. I don't believe that one extreme is right versus the other. Like, I believe it's like with finances, for example, I believe there's room for trips and for outings and for shopping sprees while also like having the discipline of saving, and being frugal with some things. I believe there's a balance, but it tends to be either one or the other with us.
Yeah, I would say maybe there's a whole other way, and not your way and not his way, and maybe there's some education, like some learning could open up some other possibilities. This happened for me where I knew I was the right one when I got married when it came to finances. We're going to save and pay off the mortgage and buy the off-brand everything because. Yeah. That's what we do, and that's the righteous, good thing to do to get, you know, to make sure you're not struggling, right? And what I was practicing was scarcity, I was practicing the scarcity mentality and living in scarcity. And I thought it was frugal and it was good. And so I just knew that was the right way. And my wife, who, if she wanted to spend a dollar or this or that or whatever, like she was wrong. She was wrong. And she needed to come around and realize like, this is what we do. She learned some things. I learned some things, and we learned some totally different things than we ever thought. It's changed everything for us, but we had to be open to it. We were in this black and white thinking. And we had to overcome the embedded indoctrination of financial whatever that we was just given to us. Mm-hmm. Right. And Tyler, can you relate to this?
Oh, 100%. And I think the key, Brandon, to what you're saying is that she learned some things and I learned some things. How do you learn?
Yes.
You step into that world and you actually have to go and make some mistakes and take your lumps and see it as part of the education.
Yes.
Right. It's like, yeah, we were raised a certain way and certain principles inside that way are still in play. Discipline, you know, being wise, living on a budget, knowing where your numbers go. And the other side has true principles and somewhere in the middle, and maybe even a whole new dimension of other ways of looking at certain ways to handle money, that you have to have the courage to step into the wilderness to go and learn. Yeah. And that's going to come a lot of times with judgment from the places that we were taught. Right. Yeah.
It's interesting, Tyler, if we talk just not to get too far into this, but mom and dad, we learned a lot of our stuff from mom and dad, and that's where we learn a lot of our stuff. But I've actually seen our mom and dad shift.
They've
even later in life, you know, they're buying things and leveraging out and taking risks that I never thought would happen.
They've changed so much.
Yeah. And so I think they're more free when it comes to the flow and the velocity of money and things in their life, because they've had the courage to do that. And we're kind of getting off course here, Casey, to the point.
The principle point is, though. Yeah. Get to the principle.
The principle is freedom. The principle is not living with a cage around us and bars that dictate who we are. And so and you said this at the beginning of this episode, Casey, where as a couple, you come together and you're both able to be authentic, authentically me. This is who I am. And then you navigate in that relationship together and you respect the other person for being them, but stay authentic yourself. And so instead of never buying that thing at that store, maybe with your husband, you say, hey, sometimes I'm going to, how can that work for you? Because I'm going to be honest here about who I am. I'm not just going to conform into this thing that you're telling me that I should be. Yeah. But I do care about you. So let's work this out together. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Casey, we're just about out of time. Have we even gotten close to what you were asking today?
maybe. I think the main thing I'm taking from all of this is that I have to be willing to risk the learning process, or like risk the comfort of maybe control and conforming, knowing that I am accepted in other people's eyes when I conform. And I have to be willing to step into the wilderness to learn, into the learning ground, which is really exciting and really scary. And learning to be compassionate with myself through the process. I think that's kind of what I'm getting from all of this. And that's how I am going to, I mean, I don't feel like I can find my heart in recovery unless I step into that.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And I encourage you to continually bring yourself back to seeing it as a learning process rather than a need for perfection.
Yeah.
You can always course correct. You can always change. You'll grow. You'll make mistakes. I promise you, you're probably making some mistakes right now, and you'll learn when you realize it.
Yeah.
And you'll make changes and adjustments, and that's okay. That's as it's designed to be.
Yeah.
This shift that you've had is the beginning of some real growth for you. But man, it's awesome. I'm so excited for you, Casey. I'd love to talk to you in like a year and just kind of see, you know, what what walls you've torn down, how much you use the sledgehammer, and how you're feeling, like how you're feeling about just like living a more authentic, congruent, free life, where you're going to create a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. So, well, maybe we can do a follow up in a year.
Let's do it.
That'd be perfect. Good. Brandon, you didn't know this, but you picked the perfect metaphor for Casey because her and her husband, they actually like remodel homes for a living.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So you picked a good metaphor today.
Nice.
But Casey, thank you for your willingness to come on today and to share yourself the way you did. Those of you guys listening, hopefully this hits some nerves for you in good ways that get you thinking and wrestling with your own recovery. If they're meaningful to you and you'd like to give Casey feedback, one of the best ways to do that is just to leave us a review, and we'll make sure she gets that information too. So thank you guys.
Yep, we'll see you.